Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of JTalk Extra Time. I'm John Steele. The next voice you'll hear, as always, is Stuart Smith. Hi, Stuart. How are you?
Yeah, I'm sick of this rain.
Yeah, you're not the only one. Well, Stu, between torrential rain, thunderstorms, and the ever-present COVID-19 situation, we did manage to get a full round of J2 and J3 games in over the weekend. So we should get straight to it, I think, if that's okay. So J2 round 7 took place over the weekend. I think the big game on the slate we agreed was Nagasaki hosting Kyoto at Transcosmos Stadium. Now, Nagasaki ended up winning this game 1-0, so they stay 4 points clear at the top of the table. I watched most of this game. The home side were in control in the first half. They set the tone very early on when Luan's free kick was headed back across goal by Freire, and Kyoto just about scrambled that away for a corner. The big goal, the important goal, Nagasaki winning 1-0. I hope I mentioned that. The goal came in the 29th minute. Takashi Sawada crossing into the box, and Keiman Togashi headed home for his third goal of the season. I think he was presented with a big bunch of flowers for reaching the 100 game mark in the J League before kickoff. So it was a good night all round for him. But Togashi should have made it 2-0 before the break. Victor Ibarbo set him up, but Jordi Bice did brilliantly to clear that one off the line. Second half was a lot more even. Ryosuke Noda kind of was in the thick of things for Kyoto, the substitute forward. Kenta Tokushige, the Nagasaki goalkeeper, brilliantly kept out a header from Noda. And then on a quick breakaway, Peter Utaka set up Noda, but he hit the outside of the post. He probably should have got that on target. Nagasaki 4 points clear at the top on 19, and Kyoto slipping down to 7th. I also noticed that Peter Utaka not very happy after this game. Had a lot to say to teammates and stuff. Hopefully that's just a sign that he doesn't like losing rather than anything else. Another big game, Stu, was second-placed Omiya, and they snapped their two-match losing streak by beating Matsumoto 1-0 at NAC 5. So, yeah, Omiya 4 points behind Nagasaki, but kind of ending that losing streak was important for them, I think. Omiya's starting lineup included the Bosnian forward, Nerman Haskic, for the first time since the opening day. And there was no Serginho in Matsumoto's squad. Presumably he was injured, so their rookie striker Itsuki Enomoto was up front. I had to Google him. His only previous game was against Seretse Osaka in the Levan Cup back in February, and he didn't have a very productive game, and he was replaced by Toyofumi Sakano at half-time. Not much happened in the first half in this one, Stu, but Omiya stepped things up quite a bit in the second. Hiroyuki Komoto could have done better with a header from an Ipe Shinozuka cross in the 55th minute. And Haskic, I think, had a good shout for a penalty turned down when he seemed to be having his shirt pulled inside the box shortly afterwards. Akira Toshima, the Omiya forward, came on as a sub in the 65th minute and scored the winner just 3 minutes later, lashing home from the edge of the box after a very smart and slick passing move. Some smart defending inside the box from Daisuke Watabe helped to keep Matsumoto at bay late on. And Masahito Ono hit the post for Omiya with about 12 minutes left just before he was replaced. So it could have been an even better night for the Squirrels. So an important win, I think, for Omiya, Stu, ending that losing streak. And obviously Nagasaki continued to motor on at the top of the table. What did you make of these two games?
You've covered them in quite a lot of depth and detail. Well, I think what I'd say is that I think just from the eye test, I think that was Nagasaki's strongest lineup that they put out. I know they've been kind of flexing about with different attacking formations and whatnot, but they started with Keiman Togashi, Victor Ibarbo up front. They had Ruan on one side. They had Kayo Cesar at the base of the midfield, Freire in the middle of defence as well, Kamikawa. So they've got that was a really strong lineup for Nagasaki. And I think that it probably tells us a little bit about what Makoto Tegoromori thinks about his kind of squad. And like, I think in the big games to come, which they will come if Nagasaki keep playing like this, because they'll be at the top of the league for a while, because they did play well. I think he'll keep that particular lineup because it looks very, very strong, physically good, but also they have a lot of pace in that side as well. And yeah, I think Kamen Togashi and Ibaba work well together. I mean, it's not the first time that they've kind of combined for goals and chances. And yeah, I think like Nagasaki were very impressive. Yeah, probably Utaka is just probably a bit pissed off that he didn't get a lot of chances come his way. But I mean, Kyoto won't be the first. Well, they're not the first team, and they certainly won't be the last team to go to Nagasaki and get beaten. It's a difficult place to go. I think for Omiya, like, I don't know what you think, but it's kind of difficult to get a read on them. I don't really know, and like, of course, they're up in second place, but I don't see how that continues unless they get a bit more dynamic up front. I think, I think Takagi is still struggling to deal with how to utilize players in his formation. I think when you mentioned in the highlights there, like the cross that Ippei Shinozuka put in for, I forget whose header it was. I was listening.
Oh, for Komoto.
Yeah, Hiroyuki Komoto. Like, it's no coincidence that cross came from Shinozuka on the right-hand side. You stick him out wide, and he's a threat. I think he's really good wherever he plays. But I think for a 3-5-2 to work, you need those kind of wing backs giving it the big licks up and down the flanks. And I think when Shinozuka plays further forward, he plays a bit narrower. And I think in an ideal world, you'd want kind of Okunuki and maybe Kurokawa to really take those kind of two shadow places behind whoever they decide to put up front, if it's Nerman Haskic or Akira Toshima or whoever. So they're second in the league, but they've only scored, I think you mentioned it in your notes, they've only scored 7 goals. And I think it is a cause for concern, because I think at this point, given that there's no playoffs, I think you need that if you're only winning games by the odd goal, I think the law of averages would say that kind of form can't really continue. And I'd rather be in a position where I'm a Tokushima, or I'm a Nagasaki, or someone else with like more potency up front. Now, it's not to say that the 3-5-2 can't work, but I think that it needs some specialist players at wing back and as the two players behind the front man for them to work. So yeah, it was a good win. I was surprised at the Matsumoto lineup, because you have to assume Serginio was injured, and they had Sakuna on the bench and whatnot. But yeah, I thought Matsumoto would actually get something out of that game. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's good for Omiya, but I'm not sure how long they can continue to grind out wins like that. Maybe I phrased that a bit wrong. Like, they can grind out wins, but to do it consistently over the course of a season that's really kind of squished in together like this, I think that's asking too much. So unless they start getting amongst the goals, I don't see them staying so tight at the back as to kind of negate that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. I think we should mention they have the best defensive record, don't they, at the moment? Just 3 goals conceded so far. But yeah, I think what I've noticed is if they score first, they win. And if they concede first, they lose. And so far, they've scored first, you know, more often they've conceded first. But yeah, I think as a neutral, it would have been interesting if Matsumoto score first, and then Omi would have to come onto them a little bit. I'm sure we'll see that in the weeks to come. But yeah, they're doing okay. We wait to see. Tougher tests lie ahead, I think. I think they perhaps got lucky with Matsumoto's lineup, as you said, as well. Yeah. Okay, Stu, we'll keep things moving, I think. So Tokushima Vortis are up into third in the table now. They're 2 points behind Omiya after a very impressive 2-0 win away at Iwata over the weekend. Tokushima got a perfect start in the 7th minute with Koki Kiyotake, a player I always forget about for some reason, powering home a corner kick from Seiya Fujita. And things got even better for Ricardo Rodriguez's men at the midway point of the half. Iwata's very experienced defender, Yoshiaki Fujita, handled the ball inside the box. And Kenny Wow, who else, put away the resulting penalty. And I think we're going to spend some time talking about this fantastic save from the Tokushima goalkeeper Toru Hasegawa just before half-time, tipping a Koki Ogawa header onto the post. Hasegawa also did brilliantly to keep Lukian out late in the second half. So a very impressive win for Tokushima. They got an easier ride than I expected at the Yamaha. Tell me about this game, Stu. I know you watched this one.
Yeah, I think Kiyotake's goal was the definition of a free header and a bullet header as well. It was combined into both because I'm not really sure who was marking him, but he had a free run in it and he powered it in. I think it was a clear penalty as well. I know we're not fans of the current iteration of the handball rule, but I think it was more than clear. And yeah, I was surprised at the ease of this game as well. Although having said that, Toru Hasegawa, who, let's be fair to him, wasn't first choice at the start of this year. And, you know, if Kami Fukumoto doesn't clunk his head against the post against Ehime, he might not even be in the side to make that save. But I feel I can do a whole podcast about this save just in and of itself. But I think the thing when you watch it close up is that when the ball leaves Koki Ogawa's head, Hasegawa is actually in the air. Like, his feet aren't on the ground. And so he doesn't have that reaction time. And it's only as the ball's travelling is when he can get to kind of put his feet on the ground, which makes him change direction. And it was a sensational save. I would be surprised if there's a better save this year. I think that it was that good. He got such a strong hand on it. And yeah, and he deserved Lukian to kind of smash that rebound into the side netting, because he didn't deserve that goal. He didn't deserve that save to be in vain. It was really good, and I think Hasegawa's done well. And the thing I like about Hasegawa, he looks really old school. You know how the trend for just player kits in general is just having like really body tight and show off the muscles and curves and things like that. He's got this baggy goalkeeper shirt that looks way too big for him, and yeah, he looks a bit dishevelled at times.
Why would baggy clothing appeal to you and me, Stu?
exactly. But like, he's a bit of a throwback, and he's been at Tokushima a long time actually. In fact, I don't remember him being elsewhere, to be quite frank. But he's had to sit behind some good goalkeepers, and yeah, it's finally getting a chance to prove his worth. And it was the save in the second half that you mentioned from Lukian, where he kind of got down, saved it, got up again, forced him wide, got a hand on it as well. It's a fully deserved clean sheet. And yeah, it was I think it's a very impressive win from Tokushima there.
Yeah, I think it's always good to give goalkeepers some love on the podcast. I know we are forced to talk about bad defending and mistakes a lot of the time, especially when we get to the J3 part of the show. So yeah, it's good to show some love this week, I think. Yeah. Okay, Stu, another impressive performance came at Fukuoka, who are up to fourth place now. Now they're level on points with Tokushima, who are in third. Fukuoka beating Okayama 1-0 over the weekend at home. That's three straight 1-0 wins for them, including home to Iwata and away at Tokushima. So then they're knocking off pretty good teams on this run. Okayama's goalkeeper, William Pop, made a great save to block Asahi Masayama's header early on in this game. But in the 40th minute, Fukuoka took the lead. Emil Salomonson's right wing cross was chested down in the penalty area by Daisuke Ishizu, and then rifled home on the half volley, the kind of goal which I can do in my head, no problem. but it doesn't really work in real life. And yeah, I wanted to mention a second half save from Cervantes, who stopped Kota Ueda's free kick with most of his body being behind the goal line. I thought that was a great save. And we haven't talked about Cervantes as much this year because he's actually had a defence in front of him for the most part. So, yeah, another good win for Fukuoka, and quite an impressive performance from what I could see. And Fukuoka are hosting Ehime this midweek, so they could be looking at four straight wins and possibly four straight clean sheets as well. We should add, Stu, that the breaking news tonight, Monday, is that somebody in the among the Fukuoka staff has returned a positive COVID-19 test. But they're doing well, I think, self-isolating at home, from what I know. And yeah, the rest of the players and staff have had PCR tests and have all come back negative. So I don't anticipate there's going to be an issue with them going forward this time. I know that the Nagoya's match in J1 was postponed, wasn't it, over the weekend, because they've had a number of positive tests in their camp. Yeah, so we wait to see that. That's something that we're living with at the moment. Back to the football, though. I think Niigata now in fifth place on 12 points. That's just one behind Tokushima and Fukuoka in the table. Niigata beat Mito 1-0 at the Big Swan over the weekend. This game was goalless at the break, which you don't really associate with Niigata these days. And Fabio uncharacteristically missed an early sitter for the home side. The moment of magic in this one came from a player who I think we're going to be talking about more and more, Stu, Shion Honma. In the 71st minute, he picked up the ball about 25 yards out, dropped his shoulder around his man, and then sent a great curling shot right into the top corner. He also caught my eye dribbling into the penalty area earlier on in the half when he was still 0-0 with a very nice kind of series of step overs. So I think he's going to be a star. I think that was the first win in three matches for Niigata, so a very important one. Yeah, now in sixth place in the table we have Kofu now. Stu, they're level on points with Niigata. Kofu beat Jeff Chiba 2-1 over the weekend. Now, this was another game that was goalless at half-time, but I wanted to mention a goal that Jeff scored in about the fifth minute. It was ruled out for offside. It was a header from Keita Yamashita for Jeff. Now, the telltale signs that this might not have been all that it seems, Stu, were that in the live feed of the game, the live transmission, there was only one replay shown, and it was the same angle as the main kind of main stand camera, so you couldn't get a good conclusive replay. And also on the DAZN highlights of this game, which I checked later because you know me, this incident wasn't included at all. So he may well have been offside, but it would have been tight, and I would have liked to have seen a good replay. I don't think Jeff's coach, Yoon Jongkwan, is very impressed with referees. If you remember, they also had a very, very soft spot kick given against them when they played against Verdi a round or two ago. Now, in the second half, Kofu hit the front in the 49th minute. Jeff did some horrible failing to clear their lines defending from a low right wing cross, and their Kofu's centre back Ryohei Arai somehow turned up on the edge of the penalty area and rammed a low driver into the net. It was 2-0 just after the hour. Junior Barros, again the young challenger, Stu, unmarked in the 6-yard box, touching home a second. And Solomon Sakuragawa, the young Jeff striker, he grabbed a late consolation for them, coming on as a substitute. Very impressive performance again. It was two goals in three games for him this year, but it wasn't enough, and Kofu kind of picked up all 3 points. I know you were across this game, Stu, especially Kofu and Jeff, so tell me about that one, and any comments on Fukuoka or Niigata, if you please.
Yeah, well, you know I'm only across that game because I want to see Junior Barros fail. But he didn't. I mean, he scored from about, what, a yard out. A chance that he would have easily missed for Gifu last year. And it's... Yeah, I called for a little bit odd as well. Like, Dudu went off towards the end as well. I don't know kind of how bad his injury was, or if it was just a bit of cramp or something like that, but he was stretched off, so that might affect them, because he's really the guy that makes them tick now, and he was very impressive throughout this game. Yeah,
he's a shithouse, isn't he, as well?
But he's
In a good way.
In a good way. In a good way. There we go. I think that, like, I think the only people that Yoon Jung-hwan dislikes more than referees are post-game interviewers, because he's really not fond of those either. I'm with you. I thought Yamashita was onside, and that's the thing with the highlights. I thought it was only in J3, because I remember watching Fukushima and Fujieda, and Fukushima had a shot which for me went clearly over the line, but no replays during the game, and obviously it was kind of water-gated out of the post-game kind of edited highlights. And that's it. They're not doing anyone any favours, really. Like, it would be much better if we could see it, and if the referees could see it and say, look, yep, we missed that. It's a difficult job. Seeing when the ball's kicked and where people are in relation to the last defender, it's a difficult job that they do well to get even half the decisions right. But Dazone are not doing anyone any favours, but I digress. Like, Jeff, I mean, I think they were slightly unlucky here, because I think Arai's goal was deflected in, if I remember right. It might have come off Taishi Taguchi, possibly. And then, once you factor in all the other things. But at the same time, Kofu, they look pretty good at home. Like, they've knocked off Omiya at home. I think they knocked off... Did they knock off Kanazawa at home as well, possibly?
Yes, that's right.
Now Chiba at home. It's turning out to be a difficult place to go if they can actually kind of sink their away game up to the same levels, and they'll be dangerous. Probably not a lot to say about Niigata, except like Shion Homo is going to be a diamond. He's so good. He pops off the screen when you watch him. I think Niigata just have to figure out how best to use him. Fukuoka, I mean, they're taking the what should we say, the pragmatic way, but they're like you mentioned, they're playing good teams. Like, they're not knocking off Gunma 1-0. Like, they've beaten Tokushima, Iwata, and now Okayama. Good goal from Ishizu, and an excellent save from Cervantes. On first view, I thought the ball was in. I thought he palmed it out from behind the line, but you know it's the correct decision when they showed like four separate replays of it as well. And so I mean, this is the Fukuoka that I think we both thought we would see, highly organized and with the I wouldn't say attacking verve, because I still think they're a little bit, they're not stodgy, but they don't click into gear all the time, but they have that potential. They, believe it or not, they remind me of Mito last year, which is no coincidence. And like, they're just clicking into gear, and I think that they'll be a difficult matchup for anyone. And when you've got Cervantes behind a reasonable defense, then you're not going to concede many goals, are you?
All good points. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing Fukuoka come up, moving up the table, because it was such a bad year last year for them. So yeah, okay. Stu, we'll keep going in the Kannon Strait Derby. Kita Kyushu beat Yamaguchi 2-0 over the weekend. That moves Kita Kyushu into joint eighth in the table, which is a pretty good going for them, I think. Yamaguchi stay third bottom. Kita Kyushu are on their way in this game just before the half hour. Naoki Tsubaki playing in Daigo Takahashi for a very cool and skillful finish. Kengo Nagai, the Kita Kyushu goalkeeper, was busy making some good saves, especially one from Yuri at the end of the first half here. And it wasn't until the 82nd minute that Kita Kyushu sealed the win. Very similar finish, actually, cutting in from the right. This time it was the sub, whose name I love saying, Akira Silvano Di Zaro, his second goal of the season.
Do you feel like James Richardson good when you say that?
I do. And feeling like James Richardson, we need more of that, you know, more of that energy on the pod. Yeah.
He's representing the bald as well.
Yeah,
well, not just James Richardson and Di Zaro, because they.
I think you might have gone straight to the heart of the periphery. Yeah, that must be what it is. He reminds me of Uratrek, Yoshinori Katsumata, the former master. Baldy man. So yeah, so yeah, good win for Kita Kyushu in this game, Stuart, and they're hosting Tokushima in midweek. Which should be an interesting game. Kita Kyushu got their tails up at the moment. Yamaguchi struggling a little there. They're hosting Nagasaki, so it doesn't get any easier for them in the midweek round. Okay, I'll run through some of the games that we haven't covered, Stu. But chime in whenever you have something you want to. You want to get off your chest. So Ehime against Ryukyu, this game finished 1-1. Now Shinji Ono started for Ryukyu here, but had to come off after just 4 minutes. I think he jarred his knee in a tackle, so that was a disappointment for him and for Ryukyu. Danny Carvajal was also back in goal for Ryukyu and was able to make a good save from Koji Kutsuna in the 15th minute. But Kutsuna wasn't to be denied. He put Ehime in front with a deflected shot about 9 minutes before the break. 2 goals in 2 games for him. And Ryukyu, to their credit, rallied straight away. Shunsuke Motegi hit the outside of the post just before half-time. But the visitors did get a deserved equaliser midway through the second half. Takuma Abe, who I'm talking about more than I expected to before the season, held the ball up well. That allowed Motegi to cross into the box. And Koya Kazama finished off the move nicely. Ryukyu actually finished strong as well, should have won it at the death, but Yu Tomidokuro missed the target for close range. Again, not the first time I've mentioned him in the context of missing a good chance to score this season. A good point for Ryukyu, I think, because it moves them off the bottom, but they're still winless. 3 points from 7 games so far, so work to be done. In the capital, the game between Tokyo Verdy and Yamagata finished goalless. Two sides pretty much cancelled each other out here. Shion Inoue came closest for Verdy early on. He went round Yamagata's goalkeeper, Masatoshi Kushibiki, but hit the post. And Verdy's Brazilian goalkeeper, Mateus, made a smart stop from Shuhei Otsuki. But defences were pretty much on top throughout that one. Now, in Gunma, Stu, things got a bit weird. Kanazawa winning 5-0 at Shoda Stadium against Aspa. Gunma actually almost went in front in this game when Toshiya Tanaka hit the outside of the post early on. But in the 8th minute, Kanazawa started to flex Mutsuki Kato's low strike from just inside the area. His first J-League goal put them in front. Lukao, who looks the business, doesn't he? Scored twice before half time to kind of pretty much seal the win. The first one was a very easy header, incredibly easy header for a player like him. And he also was able to score a rebound after a quick counter attack for his second. That's the bad defender in keeping for the week mentioned, I think. 4 for the season now for Lukao, looking like a good purchase. The rain in the second half got harder and harder. Things got harder generally for Gunma. Their defender, Tetsuya Funatsu, scored an own goal midway through the second half, volleying Takeyasu's cross past his own goalkeeper. And Takumi Hasegawa got in on the act, side-footing in a 5th goal. That was still with 17 minutes left, so Gunma might be relieved that things didn't get worse. It was just the 5. So Kanazawa joint 8th now, Gunma bottom, and looking pretty ragged. Kanazawa taken on Omiya in the midweek round, whereas Gunma host Tochigi, which would feel like a relegation 6-pointer in an ordinary season, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Also, back in the capital for a moment, Stuart, Machida Zelvia beat Tochigi 2-0 at home, and that the job was pretty much done by half-time here, because Machida were 2-0 up at the break. The first goal came midway through the half. Taiki Hirato played a short corner to Kaina Yoshio, and his cross went in, was converted by Machida's Serbian forward Masovic for his first J-League goal. The ball actually went in off his shoulder, but he looks like quite a big guy, so you know you can tell him. I'm not going to tell him. And the second goal before half time is weird. It was almost an identical goal. Another short corner from Hirato to Yoshio. Another kind of swirling cross. This time, no complaints about the finish. Beautiful header from Itsuki Oda made it 2. I think the only talking point from the second half is that there were 8 minutes of stoppage time at the end of it, but the thunderstorm passing overhead meant that play was suspended in the 95th minute and that the referee took the players off. After a pretty quick stoppage, play resumed, and Matt just saw out the last 3 minutes without any problem. So would have been a weird one if that game had ended up not concluding. Because it was a match to win, at that point. But Stu, was there anything from that roundup that you wanted to take issue with or comment on?
It was a long roundup.
Sorry.
No. It was good. I think. I think Matchida's win against Tochigi was probably the easiest game to predict this weekend. I didn't really see any other result at the start of the day, just because. Machida were bad last week in Mito, and I don't think Renko Popovic is a manager to kind of handle those kind of defeats lightly. I'm pretty sure he worked his players really hard in training. I think Gunma can't have any more defeats like that, otherwise I think their coach will be gone pretty soon. I think there are you can be winless, which Gunmara and Ryukyu are, but we all know which side is better, and it's just not Gunma. And it's weird because they have some, on paper they have some really good players. I think Genki Omae started up front in this game. I think they had Iwakami, Yuzo in defense, Masaki Miyasaka in midfield. Kohei Shin, your favorite, they are woeful. They are bad, and you with all due respect to Kanazawa, who are a good team, and this Lucao looks really good after kind of didn't really show that much at Kagoshima last year, but he's a more than worthy replacement of Clooney, who Kanazawa lost last year. I think that, to be kind of outplayed by that amount on your home ground, it kind of shows that there's something deeper rooted there. It wouldn't surprise me if Gunma were to remain winless this week, so the midweek round and the following Sunday or Saturday, whenever they play, if they were beaten in both those games, it wouldn't surprise me to see their coach binned. Because they've looked crap all year, to be quite frank. They don't look anything like the sum of their parts, that kind of thing. I think good point for Ryukyu. Probably should have been more at the end, Tommy Dokura missed the chance, as you said, but that's a morale boosting point. But Ryukyu are just another team that they're winless, but they look far, far better than Gunma. They look like they have a plan, and they look like whatever you think of Higuchi, the manager, it looks like the players understand what they are supposed to be doing, whereas it doesn't look like that in Gunma.
I think I would add, if I were a Gunma supporter, that the fact that their collective heads went down so quickly that game would really bother me. I got annoyed with the Lucao's first goal, the header, because it's in about the 15th minute. But the guy who's crossing the ball in, there's no pressure on him at all. No defender within 5 yards of him. And Lucao is a good player. We know this, but he doesn't have to do anything to get ahead of his marker other than take one step forward. Defender doesn't react. Goalkeeper doesn't react. And that's 50 minutes into the game. Not in the last minute. I mean, it's not excusable for your head to go down at any point, but 50 minutes into a very important match, I just was left thinking the players had lost that game pretty much in the tunnel.
That makes sense. And it's just I think that just goes to show that they either don't understand what the manager wants, or they understand what the manager wants and they decide to do something different. Or it's exactly what the manager wants and they're playing it to the T. In all of those instances, the manager is at fault. Because it wouldn't surprise me to see him go. I think, to give Kanazawa their credit, I think that's the second time they've scored 5 goals away from home. this year. Didn't they score five at Niigata?
I think it was five. It's 5-3, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, like for a team that kind of doesn't kind of stand out with attacking talent or kind of brand name attacking talent, they sure do a good job of sticking the ball in the back of the net. And I think that you underestimate Kanazawa at your peril. I know they suffered a couple of injuries. I think they've brought in someone on loan from Niigata. I think they brought in a fullback, so I don't know whether they're struck with injuries down there. But Kanazawa, a good little team, and they've already signalled their intent by smacking five goals twice this year. So, good to see them carrying on their good form from last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice kits and nice new stadium in the offing. I think everything's on the up and up, isn't it, in Kanazawa at the moment. You just reminded me on the injuries, Stu. I wanted to mention Machida Zelvia's, Korean winger, Jong Chung-gun. It's been announced today he's out injured for about 3 months. Which is going to be a blow for them, I think. I think maybe we mentioned, but for anyone, if I didn't make it clear, there's a midweek round of a full slate of midweek games in J2 this week. So Wednesday, July the 29th is the date. All the teams are kicking off at the same time, 7 p.m. as usual. So we'll run through the fixtures quickly. Stu, Yamagata are hosting Jeff Chiba. Mito host Kofu. Gunma taking on Tochigi. I'll stick to the highlights for that one. Tokyo Verdy taking on Niigata. Should be some goals there, I feel. Matsumoto welcome Machida to the Sun Pro Alwin Stadium. A game I like the look of, mentioned already, Kanazawa versus Omiya. Kanazawa definitely will have their tails up after that big win in Gunma. Omiya in second place, but as we mentioned, not blowing anybody's socks off just yet. I think the first goal is crucial in this game. It'd be very interesting to see what happens if Kanazawa were to get it. Okayama hosting Kyoto. Leaders Nagasaki are on the road at Yamaguchi, as I mentioned. Fukuoka taking on Ehime, where a Fukuoka win would put them, I would think, on the verge of the top two automatic promotion places. And Kitakyushu versus Tokushima, another game I think looks good. Kitakyushu good at home, Tokushima good everywhere. So that could be a good one. And Ryukyu are hosting Iwata, and Iwata don't look very good at the moment, so that might be a chance for Aussie's men to get their first win. Which games look good to you, Stu, on the Wednesday slate?
Yeah, it's difficult to look past the ones that you've just put up there. I think we just spoke about Kanazawa being free scoring, Omiya being free defending, and that'll be a decent clash. I think Kitakyushu and Tokushima, I think that'll be one for the purists. You've got lots of good individual talent there, two teams that like to attack but are also kind of really well set up. I think for the car crash watchers amongst us, I think Gunma and Tochigi might be the one you slow down for. And Matsumoto and Machida will be an interesting game as well. Like, the two teams that they're not that dissimilar in the way that they set up and the way they play. I would assume that Matsumoto would make a lot of changes, and I think that Machida will be forced into a few, so I think that'll be a good game. I think for the predictors out there, there's quite a lot of kind of difficult games to call this match day, so I wish everyone the worst of luck. Yeah,
it's interesting you picked out the Matsumoto match game, because I felt that's the game which looks like it's going to be good on paper but won't be in the harsh reality, because I think Machida will be very defensive. I think Matsumoto will also be trying to keep it tight and just nick it. So I don't know. I'd love to be proved wrong. Been wrong many times, as anyone who's in the prediction league can easily see. So perhaps we'll mention the prediction league a bit more before we wrap up the J3. Positive. But if there's anything else you want to say about J2, if you're good, we can move on, I think.
Yeah, we can move on, sure.